This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 411 for March 2nd of 2018, Death of the Diesel and Michigan's Move into Mobility. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outofline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Out of Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
All right, we get to do another Out of Line After Hours.
You do.
Barry.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing pretty good.
You know, I was going to say, I was going to complain about the weather, except for the fact that this is Michigan, and it is the 1st of March, and the fact that it is snowing like rain, and it was a few hours ago raining and snowing, but we live here, so it comes with.
In like a lion.
Yeah.
March in like a lion. Hey, we got to let everybody know we're also joined, first time ever, by Dustin Walsh
from
Crane's Detroit Business. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Good addition here. But our special guest for the day is Trevor Paul. Let's see, he's a vice president with the Michigan Economic Development Council. Do I got that? You're the
corporation.
You're the emperor of Planet M. And what else?
That's a great name.
Yeah.
I'm going to have you talk to my boss
and
have a business card that says Emperor.
Uh-huh.
That's
Emperor
wonderful.
Of Planet M.
Yes, perfect.
So what is Planet M for those who don't know?
Sure. So Planet M is the state's mobility brand, much like the Pure Michigan travel brand. We take Planet M all over the world, whether it's in Israel, China, or even Ohio and California. And essentially, we use that to tout the state's assets, whether it's, you know, our great universities, testing sites, all the great end customers that are here, all the research and development centers. Planet M is sort of the umbrella that covers all of those.
One of the things it seems that you guys are really focused on now is how do you take Michigan, traditional metal banging, manufacturing yep. kind of automotive based economy, and move it into this world of mobility and autonomy.
Sure. It's not as much creating this new world. It's already there. It's existed for years. It's just retelling the story. You know, one of the issues you have when you've been the world's leader at something for 100 years, it's tough to break traditional stereotypes. And I think what we've seen over the last 5 years is, as Silicon Valley and other tech clusters around the world have struggled to get to mass production, they've leaned back on Detroit to say, how can we bring this to everybody and not just to a few random people in San Francisco and Pittsburgh? So we've become relevant in that way. But also in the process of leaning on Detroit for production, we're beginning to see some of these R&D centers and some of these great software engineers moving back into Michigan. And we've become much more of a, I would say, a balanced automotive town and not just bending steel and sparks. Although that stuff's really cool and still very important.
Yeah, right. So you guys say that Michigan is the number one vehicle producing state, that we have 7 global or North American research and development centers here in Michigan mm-hmm. for auto companies. OEMs have 8 R&D facilities in the state of Michigan. 81 of the top global automotive suppliers have North American headquarters in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
61 of the top 100 North American auto suppliers are in Michigan.
You got numbers.
They're your numbers, my friend. 27 assembly plants. Okay, so I'm some guy who is developing a LiDAR system. Why do I care about any of that?
Those are your customers, man. At the end of the day, purchasing decisions come through Auburn Hills, Dearborn, Novi, downtown Detroit. So in many ways, you know, Silicon Valley Labs can be very, very important in getting, you know, the technology to a place where it's ready to be commercialized. But ultimately, checks are going to be signed in many cases in the North American auto market in Detroit. So that's one reason. Second reason is we have all 4 seasons. So for testing and deployment, we have potholes. We have a great environment for testing for the elements. And that's not just around Southeast Michigan, but that's even up in the UP. We have a great, obviously, our university network, and not just U of M Michigan State, but like the College for Creative Studies. Yeah, we're an engineering town, but we're also a design town. People forget there's a symbiotic relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. So how's that? Are you going to come to Michigan, Gary? Did I sell you?
Yeah, you did. I got my LiDAR companies on the way. But okay, so I've got this LiDAR company, and you mentioned potholes. We were talking about potholes before the show began. You know, and it seems to me that if I'm some guy who's saying, oh, gee, Michigan is really touting itself as being this mobility center, yet, you know, it's a nightmare in terms of the road surfaces here. So it seems like we're sort of like behind the times in Michigan and not leading the times in Michigan in terms of the infrastructure of our roads.
I think that's fair. But we also have over 350 miles of connected freeway and streets around the state equipped to collect data.
We're also number one, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, we have progressive legislation in a sense that we lead the way when it comes to when autonomous vehicles are ready for sale or ride-sharing autonomous vehicles. We're not going to get in your way as a state. So we've created an environment, at least legislatively, for you to come here
and be
innovative.
California beating us on that? Isn't in August or April 1st that they're going to begin allowing...
That's when they legalize pot, Gary.
No, actually, we've been the leader, and California and Nevada are catching up. And so is Florida, and Texas actually just had some news last week. Yeah. So we know that we have to keep updating that legislation. But even beyond sort of the legislative environment, I mean, we have one of the most progressive departments of transportation. So when it comes to the first international crossing of an autonomous vehicle, handling the toll booths of Windsor and then hooking all the way back around into Sarnia and Port Huron, we did that last August. I mean, you look at the nation's first connected construction zone, which is Auburn Hills up on I-75. So we're interested in and can be at very much a whiteboard, for startups,
connected construction zone? What is that?
A smart pavement that can collect data on certain vehicles that also can alert a vehicle if lanes have changed and workers have now changed. So it could, you know, be just a matter of seconds in it, you know, that the driver gets back to know that there's a worker ahead, but that could mean life or death, right? So.
But I think Gary's onto something there. I mean, because you travel all over the world.
Is this a three-on-one journalist?
This is a fast point. Yes.
That's why we invited you.
Where's my PR person? I don't understand.
Right. No, but you travel all the
Just
world because
the
I, see, yeah. I see all of your amazing photos on social media of you traveling all over the world and doing all these things that make me jealous. But what is the hardest part? I mean, is there a part about Michigan, something about our identity or in the world that is hard for you to sell beyond all of the amazing things that we have in our progressive MDOT and all that? I mean, what is the hard part to get over for companies that are looking at possibly here?
I mean, the stock answer would be...
I don't want the stock answer.
Well,
your answer.
That, and then I'll... Yeah, okay. I would
we
say
want
that
the truth.
That there's union stereotypes, right? Sure. But I think that can stretch across the U.S., and we now have systems in place to get around that. Again, it's just about telling that story. I think when you go to a place like Germany, they are looking for startups and innovation that can stretch across industries. Often some of the best automotive innovations can come from the healthcare industry or the medical. You look at some of the cameras now that you have to measure, you know, biometric reactions or facial expressions. Those technologies didn't necessarily start in the automotive industry. I think one of the things we have working against us is that for a long time, we've been a one industry state or one industry region. And I think we're realizing now that, you know, we need to focus more on open innovation versus that siloed next unit off the line approach. And that's not going to change overnight. And that's why at the state we're working every day to kind of redefine the types of companies that come here.
So does this go back to John's original point about Michigan being perceived as a manufacturing, bending and welding metal sort of thing?
And so
what Dustin is saying that people might perceive it that way. And so if I'm to go back to the LiDAR company guy, it's going,
right.
We don't.
I know a LiDAR company. It's a startup, and you're familiar with them. I won't name them, but they're producing out of the Mission District in San Francisco. And I'm just on the other end of the phone smacking my head going, are you serious? Like, what is rent in the Mission District of San Francisco to produce X amount of units? So I think that's, that has to play
in. So what becomes a reaction to something like that?
And the cost of living is a great, I know your question was about challenges of selling the state, but the truth is, the quality of life here is I think second to none, and you need to make like 60% more if you want to maintain the quality of life you'd have here in a place like Los Angeles. So I think it's just a matter of time before that Mission District startup realizes if they want to go big, they probably need to get out of the Mission District.
Mm-hmm. Even so, Detroit plus a bazillion other cities across the United States just mm-hmm. threw their hat in the ring to try to get Amazon's second headquarters.
Yeah.
And it was great to see the city of Detroit even align itself with Windsor in Canada mm-hmm. to put its effort forward. But Amazon slapped down the city going, no, number one, you guys don't have a regional transportation system. But more importantly, and I think this is what relates to you, you don't have the talent. You don't have the young people. We don't see how you're going to generate, you know, all the kind of people that we need to hire. But you're working on that.
100%. What's Amazon? Is it a jungle? A cheap joke. It's after hours, guys.
Yeah. Rim shot.
Right.
Be here all week.
So actually just this last week, the governor made a huge announcement, the Marshall Plan for Talent, where the state's going to put up about $100 million that's focused on not just recruiting talent to the state, but also working on K-12 to make sure they have the systems and getting the right curriculums in place, or even later on in life, industry certifications. So as market trends shift, our workers can be prepared for that. You know, we've done a great job in the state. We've filled nearly 524,000 positions, but the truth is there's a ton more. I mean, there's 700,000 positions that we need to fill. And the truth is it's not just the state attracting talent and going to that kid in the Mission District and saying like, hey, you should come to Michigan because you can live on a lake and here you're living off a freeway. It's also companies changing their cultures, taking some cues from places like Facebook and Google, making it an exciting place to work. And frankly, working with millennials to show that, hey, yeah, if you start your company or you start your career with us right now, we have a way that we can get you 10 years from now the type of salary you want and the type of benefits that you want. So it's also kind of rethinking the Michigan company.
What's the example company of that? Because I know you're out there throwing examples out for the culture change. There has to be companies here that have done that. So which ones do you tout?
I love the startup community that we've developed here. I think May Mobility, Split are two startups that have made some news lately. But the way that they've been able to attract talent engineers from all over the country. You were just talking about a company that's focused before we. Sorry, we. I shouldn't. We,
before
you should have been
started.
Recording
the show before the show.
Yeah, we had a great conversation. But a company that recruits MIT talent to come
Zenuity,
here.
Right. It's a joint venture between Volvo and Autoliv.
And so they must be doing right to get MIT talent on the ground.
Well, they struggle.
Right.
They do struggle. You know, they're at an office park out off Southfield Freeway. I mean, they do struggle with mm-hmm. with doing that. But they do. They obviously are successful to a certain degree.
I think Quicken in the Bedrock group of companies does it right.
Sure.
And you're beginning to see some really interesting things happen within some of our large service providers like Blue Cross Blue Shield, Henry Ford.
And we were talking earlier, too, before the show started, a couple of successes here. Two startups, mobility startups, one called Split just was acquired by Bosch.
Right.
And another one called May Mobility just got bought by BMW.
Right.
So there's two Detroit startups, you know, bought by two German companies. And that's got to be at least a good first step forward.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'll start with May Mobility. I mean, they were the darling of Y Combinator, which is maybe the most exclusive accelerator in San Francisco. There were many great offers that would have had them stay in California. But because of their Michigan roots, they came back. And also, once they were back, they had plenty of opportunities to go to other cities and test their autonomous shuttle, but they chose downtown Detroit to test.
So what do they do? I mean, for people who are not familiar.
Sure. So May Mobility, they essentially produce autonomous shuttles to be driven around cities. And so one of their
These
first,
are like little 12 to 18.
Yeah.
Is that one of their vehicles?
Oh, you set me up. Yeah. Yeah, that is one of their vehicles. So, yeah, you're usually looking at what, 6 to maybe 10 people. Depending on the size. Right now, that's the size. But I think eventually they're looking to do multiple sizes. And especially now with this partnership with BMW, I think some of the technology advances on their shuttle is going to be a pretty exciting couple of years.
So do they make the shuttle or do they make the technology that goes into the shuttle?
They make the shuttle.
They make the whole shuttle.
They make the shuttle, yeah. What I was going to say is they're a great story in a sense where they came back and then the economic development community in Southeast Michigan literally wrapped their arms around May Mobility, whether it was an insurance issue first customers, we tried to make the right connections along the value chain for them. Split's the same way. They came through Techstars Mobility, which is a great regional asset. For those that don't know, it is essentially an accelerator that runs once a year and brings companies, usually 10 to 12 companies, from around the world. In fact, this past year, they had a Dubai-based company that does intersection safety violation technology. And they essentially have decided to stay and are now running potential pilots this year in Southeast Michigan. So they're another success story.
So Split is an app, not a vehicle.
Sorry, I went on a tangent because I love Techstars Mobility so much. But Split went through Techstars Mobility. Mm-hmm. And then once they could have went back to New York where they came from, but they stayed. And actually their office, their headquarters is in the MEDC Planet M landing zone, which is a center of gravity in downtown Detroit for where large corporates like Bosch, who acquired them, or not
such
acquired,
a salesman
but yeah,
pitch.
Acquired them.
Center of
right.
gravity.
Right.
Yeah.
Where they can
the
work
Planet
in
M center
on,
of gravity.
Projects. So Ford, GM, MasterCard have taken advantage of it. And then we have 24 startups that some are from Michigan, but others are from around the world that use the space. And so Split was able to leverage that community to get what they needed to grow. So I love those companies. They're great success stories. Cornerstones.
Are there opportunities outside of technology companies? Because it seems like every city that's trying to reinvent itself, right? Detroit, Pittsburgh, pick a city. It's all technology. But you look at some of the cities that have done really well that aren't chasing technology. Minneapolis, for instance, has done really, really well because it produces a whole lot of middle management kind of people, white-collar job kind of people. Mm-hmm. And they're not, I mean, it doesn't mean they're not getting technology companies, but they're not out there chasing them as hard as we are. Mm-hmm. So is there opportunity outside of that, assuming that not everyone wants to work for a tech company?
I think so. And it goes back to our original question about production and bending steel. I mean, there's some really cool industry 4.0. I guess it's technology with robotics, but
sure.
there's hardware companies that are doing some innovative things globally that are based here. So it's not always about the next cool app or the next software. There is a hardware component to cool, innovative job creation. And I mean, I think you're seeing that here.
Yeah, I think part of the issue...
I don't know if that I answered the question.
Sort of.
I
guess I was looking at, like, does it take the technology industries to get the ancillary industries like banks, grocery stores, other, you know, headquarters that may be different than just brand new technology? Mm-hmm. To get those companies to think about here, is that different, I guess? Or is that just something we're not as interested in, or that's just traditional economic development, and we're focused on this technology because of its potential upside?
I think it's the potential upside. I mean, you think of just data collection and categorization, the decision making we're going to be able to make in the next 40 years. Our attention has to be on technology right now.
Remember, think about it this way: if you get a nice high-paying tech job, then Whole Foods will move in, so you can actually spend your money at the Whole Foods.
Ideally, but if you look at the numbers, actually manufacturing jobs actually have a higher multiple ratio than tech jobs do. So,
well, I think when you look at the tech focus that's in Michigan, it's all on mobility, including autonomy and the like. Because there's a potential upside. There's also the potential, and I think the likelihood of massive disruption.
Sure.
That our base in automotive could go away. It really could. Mm-hmm. So we absolutely need to make sure that the OEMs, the tiers, the research centers, the design schools, everybody is on board with this new move wherever it's going. We better be at the leading edge of it.
So Trevor, last month the North American International Auto Show had something called Automobility. Was that something that Planet M did, or, you know, tell me about the involvement.
Yes.
So what was it and how'd you do it?
Yeah. So Automobility is a section of the Detroit Auto Show that has grown. Well, our inaugural year was not this past year, but the year before. But it's grown in spades coming into 2018. And it essentially allows startups, and I believe we had over 60 startups from around the world showcase their technology, but also some of the cool tier ones and larger companies that almost have skunk works groups that are producing really, really cool AI, smart cities technologies. It gave them a chance to demo some of the things that they're doing. And then on top of that show, we had a matchmaking where we had startups that were able to kind of select which automakers on the main floor they wanted to meet with, but then also VCs that were at the show. And we were able to pre-schedule over 500 meetings within Automobility between these partners. And that's one of the things that I think Planet M, besides being a great brand is. It's a business development platform, a matchmaker that can be intentional about the types of connections that are made. And hopefully, once a successful contract is signed, that they stay in Michigan. But automobility will be back and better than ever next year. And we actually just had a meeting yesterday in Troy with Rod Elberts about like how to make it better, whether it's changing the format of the show or, I mean, even adding more different things to it.
Mm-hmm. How do you measure the success? Okay, you had a bunch of meetings and all that, but as you said, you need contracts signed. Is that the metric?
Yeah, I mean, it can be different. I mean, contract signed is a buyer-supplier metric. I think acquisitions, partnering for on-pilot programs. You can be, given the new world of mobility, it gives us an opportunity to redefine our metrics. So I would say that some of the other more strategic ways of having two companies come together would be something that we would, beyond contracts, be interested in.
Mm-hmm. So as you go, as Dustin mentioned, you go around the world and talk with companies, right, and try to attract them to come to Michigan. What are some of the interesting technologies that you've chanced upon that you think are important for mobility, whether it be in Michigan or anywhere on the planet?
Yeah, that's interesting. I really think sensing driver mood, driver fatigue, driver drunkenness, fabric that's able to tell by the chemicals that are being released whether you've been drinking.
Really?
Just really interesting IoT plays.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, just at a very basic level, some of the, it's not necessarily new technology, but some of the new ways that cities are thinking about helping some of their lower income folks, whether it's helping them get to doctor's appointments, even making bus stops safer. You have limited budgets in some of those cases and limited resources, but what they've been able to do has been pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've got a comment here from Charles Grunchy, who writes in to say, I think you need balance. Going for tech is fine, but don't forget the base of the city, he says. Synergies will develop with balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets to your point, that Dustin, that don't just chase tech.
Sort of. I also think it's dangerous to just chase manufacturing, too. I mean, I think that's a dangerous play as well. But I was just curious as to what degree, you're chasing technology. We don't know how that's going to pan out, right? There's inherent risk in doing this. And everyone else is also doing it. So it's an interesting dynamic, I think.
So what do you think? What else should we be going after?
I'm not sure, but I think we should. I'm not saying we shouldn't chase tech, but there's this weird dynamic where it's us versus Silicon Valley. And I know Trevor disagrees with this, but I always find it funny because it's like, why do we want to be Silicon Valley? And I know they don't want to be us. So there's so much more to us than that. So to me, it's always interesting to see that debate. And I think we need to chase turning out and keeping talent here that may or may not be in the auto industry.
In some ways, we have gone at like the Toyota assembly plant. I mean, that was kind of the traditional roots. Mm-hmm. We chase that.
Yep.
Foxconn, we chase that. And that wasn't necessarily, cutting edge technology. It was just mass production, right? So, I mean, it's not like we've given up on some of the things we've always worked on. It's just we've added a new tool to our tool belt. We've added a new strategy that we think will get us ready and get our kids ready for what's to come in the next 50 years.
Mm-hmm. So, both Dustin and John have mentioned, other cities that are going after this sort of thing. And I'm thinking, this earlier this week, Ford announced that they're going to be launching in Miami.
Yep.
You guys have all
autonomous pizza delivery.
You guys have all mentioned Pittsburgh. Uber's running its autonomous fleet in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You've got, San Francisco with Cruise Automation, and they're going to be doing more things there. Waymo in Phoenix. Is it going to be the autonomous vehicles where we only see them at the American Center for Mobility or M-City, or are we going to see real stuff happening here?
I'll answer that if you don't mind. We only care about those things and only notice because we didn't get them. I've ridden in autonomous vehicles, 7 years ago is when I started riding in them? We've been doing that forever. And because other cities get them, it's new to them. So it's like, roll out the parade and light off the fireworks. But for us, we've been doing that forever.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't always been on public roads, but they were on public roads. That was the hilarious thing to me when we were talking about legalizing the testing of autonomous vehicles. Like, well, we already kind of do it. I mean, it's just they already have the license plate. What's the difference, right? It was it was the idea of like, oh, no, maybe we should actually develop some rules around this thing that they've already been doing. Mm-hmm. I have been behind the wheel of a car that drove itself. I have no, I'm not an engineer. I probably shouldn't have done it, but we did it because you could. And I think that's the difference. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, to me, it's that it's new to them and not to us.
No, that's a great point. Sometimes we don't realize here in Michigan, because we're so focused on the traditional way that we've always done things, that most people are oblivious to the stats that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, how much R&D work is actually going on here. Mm-hmm. I see it when I travel outside of the United States. There is a genuine respect for the intellectual property, the brain power that resides here. And we are a player in this move. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't just pat ourselves on the back because it can go away like that. Mm-hmm. This is so much in its infancy, changing so fast. Mm-hmm. We really don't know exactly where it's going, but I will say the trend lines keep getting clearer.
To your point, though, and I will agree that, you know, there are certain neighborhoods in San Francisco where you don't go a week without seeing, you know, an autonomous vehicle with big LIDARs and radars and stuff. Like, we don't see that as much around here, and it could be because we've spread ourselves out so much, but I would like more mobility demonstrations. I would like to see people, consumers, not just business people, get more excited about what's going on. And there are things that we're doing, but I know what you're saying.
You would have liked the win that Miami got for Ford to come out and do a Medium post and, you know, Sheriff Markabee talking about, you know, we're doing this and we're going to have more and dominoes.
It started in Ann Arbor.
Right.
But I mean, but it was sort of like flip. And now they're like, you know, we're going to Miami.
But I want to jump on something that you just said, because I think you're onto something here, Trevor. All the polls show that the public's very wary of autonomous cars. They're scared of them in a lot of cases.
Because they've never been in one.
And I make the analogy, yeah, go back to the 1930s when commercial air travel first started. How many people said, I'm never getting in one of those damn flying machines?
Right.
So if MEDC...
I still
say that.
Yeah.
I say it just like
okay,
that.
Okay, all right, got it.
MEDC, Planet M, all the more that you can do to get the public exposed to these things would be a massive advantage for this region.
Right.
Because if the people of this area believe, hey, I'm part of this, I've seen it, I've experienced it, I'm telling my friends and family and all that, no one else is doing it. They're all chasing the tech part. Let's get the people here. Let's design the hardware and the software. No one is trying to be inclusive about getting the public on board. And if you guys can do that, it would be a major win.
That, to me, has been the most disappointing thing of what we've been doing is, and every time, you know, there's how many auto events in this city every month, let alone, you know, a year, where I go and I show up and they're talking about autonomous vehicles and they involve the public and yet the thing is stationary. My mind explodes, and I get it. There's insurance. There's all kinds of things. But then you see it happening in other cities, and I think that's the deflating part of it.
Yeah.
It's like, why aren't we putting people, even if we, like, do a random drawing, like, hey, you've showed up at this event. Let's do a random drawing to get in this vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, because it was a really eye-opening experience to me when I went in one and the damn thing was driving itself. I was like, you know what? I could get used to this.
Yeah.
And I think everyone else would come to that conclusion, too. It's just they're afraid of it.
And what I mean, you know, you talk about Miami. The one that I would like, I like them all. I would want them all to be in Michigan. But the Arizona example, where you have Waymo, who's grown their operations in Novi. You have Pacifica, you know, that has partnered with Chrysler or FCA that has partnered. I mean, these are Michigan-based companies or have companies with a Michigan presence that had to go to Arizona to get what they wanted. Or that was a better environment. So I'd love to understand what we missed there. So I look at it more as a learning opportunity of, okay, why didn't you choose Michigan? What can we do better next time?
Yeah. Potholes.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Comes back.
Snow.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of more questions. Kevin Fetty wants to know, since mobility will bring about more big data, which Silicon Valley is the cutting edge, is Planet M promoting data analytics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that Kevin Fetty's absolutely right. I mean, the future is dead. I actually had dinner with a lawyer from Ford Mobility last night, and she's like, you want to start your own business? Start a business that categorizes data, that can make this stuff make sense. And the analytics of it go far beyond an autonomous vehicle. I mean, I think mobility, I think air, land, space, and sea. So as fast as autonomous vehicles are taking off, vertical takeoff and landing technology is allowing the flying car to be a reality. And
passenger
think of the data.
Drones.
Yeah, right, passenger drones. Think of the data that that's going to require. So, yes, we want to highlight companies that are doing that. We just need more companies like that in Michigan. And so there's an attraction piece before there's a promotion piece.
Well, the challenge isn't the data itself. They have more data they know what to do with, and they probably could figure out how to categorize it. How do you monetize it?
Yep.
I mean, that's the big...
That's the one that every
auto company, traditional to new, is trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. How do we monetize all this stuff we're getting in? Because we're tracking it, we're storing it in servers somewhere, we don't know how to make any money off it. And I think that's, whoever solves that is going to be the one in the big new skyscraper in Detroit.
I will raise the stakes, and it's somewhat provocative, I guess, to say, but what if, you know, we offer these big incentives, these dollars, right? But what if data becomes part of the incentive package where we can give you a more unique or challenging set of data to test if you were to test in Michigan?
Well, who owns the data is going
to
be that.
Who owns it? Right, exactly. So there's questions that need to be figured out, but I think data is a form of currency that can be used to build up communities in the future.
Totally agree.
Is part of the Planet M play that, you know, as John alluded to earlier, that, okay, if we get more autonomous or automated cars that are out there, that we may need fewer cars in toto. Mm-hmm. And so many of the traditional manufacturing jobs that Michigan has had will cease to exist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you know how many...
They already do.
But I mean,
how many did we lose in the recession?
But, I mean, how many more... could we potentially lose when there's, like, you don't own your car because I don't own my car and John doesn't own his car and Trevor doesn't own his car. We all share a car, right? And so we're taking vehicles out of the fleet.
From a pure economic look at it, all of them, right? I mean, if you think about how standardized do the cars look, how standardized are there? Are there differentiations between market? Is it the same car at every global market?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Mexico builds them all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in North America.
Right, which conceivably be a big problem for a state like Michigan, right?
100%. I mean, we all have an idea of when U.S. new car sales will peak out. I mean, you'll say maybe 2025. You may say it already
today.
Peaked out. Right. So, yeah, of course we have 25% of the auto industry. Of course, this is a huge loss for us. And I think we have a really important job as public officials to decide whether we legislate and innovate to protect the past or legislate and innovate to open doors of the future. And I think that answer becomes pretty easy when you see the size of this market by 2050, which I think is going to be around $7 trillion.
This market being what? This market being?
New mobility,
which involves air, land,
space, sea, multimodal transportation, autonomous vehicles.
What industry is currently worth $7 trillion out of curiosity?
I don't think any. I want to say the automotive industry right now, as we know it today, is about $2.5 trillion, something like that.
Sure.
If you add in all transportation, including airlines, ships, trains, blah, 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 I think you're looking at about $5 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing talking about a growing yet another $2 trillion on top of that.
Potentially, yeah.
Which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, depending on how you market that, right, and plan for it, right? Industry that size doesn't need to lose any jobs, right? I mean,
well, the jobs will change, and you know,
sure,
they'll probably be more technical, because even though I do believe we will lose manufacturing jobs, even if things just, let's forget mobility and autonomy for the moment, the slow churn rate of automation is going to take jobs away in and
sure.
of itself. But, you know, there's still going to be the technical jobs. It's still going to take just as many people to design an autonomous car as it does for an internal combustion or electric car today.
Well, it's the parking garage theory, right? So if manufacturing jobs are the cars in the garage, sure, some of them come and go. But think about all the cars out there that aren't in the garage, which means all the jobs that are yet to be created versus all the jobs that are already created.
Right.
Well, maintenance. I mean, if cars are always running, yeah, we'll have less of them on the road, but we'll need more people to fix those suckers,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
we haven't figured out that either. Like, right. how do you maintain cleaning systems for LiDAR?
They're working on it.
Yeah.
So presumably one of the things that you do is you look at companies that are, you know, adjunct, not just, you know, my LiDAR company. It's mm-hmm. the companies that are going to clean my LiDAR.
Yeah, you want to create a value chain. And frankly, we're not, it's just not us out alone doing that. The company will work with us. And mm-hmm. many companies that exist here today in Michigan will say, hey, you should look at X company or Y company because I would love to have them in Michigan for selfish reasons. But really, their selfish reasons help our
Do you find
company.
The OEMs to be supportive of what
yes,
you're doing?
100%. 100% in every way, from city solutions to overall traditional production to some of the government relations questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap this segment up, but we got one more question from the audience. Okay. Joe Wilder wants to know, is there a story in aftermarket entrepreneurs? What about people making parts and competing against the OEMs using 3D printing, CNC, new bonding techniques, TIG welding, CAD, and the like?
Yep. And I'll tell you, I get that request from Boeing. I get it from new space companies that are launching rockets or trying to launch rockets one a day going forward for low-orbit satellites. So beyond automotive, 3D printing, CNC, all of that, it's such a big play right now. And when I get those asks for 3D printing suppliers in Michigan, they're not very long. I would love to see more companies. I would love to see more competition here. How we do that, I mean, if you guys have ideas, I mean, you're smart. Give them to me, and I'll try to implement them.
Real good. With that, we're going to have to wrap it up. Trevor Paul, thanks so much for coming on. Very interesting.
Yeah,
this is
a hot seat,
it's
man.
A hot seat, man, and it's a hot topic. Yeah. So.
But you're a cool guy. So
Yeah.
Come on. This guy.
Come on.
He, after all these hard questions, he throws in the compliment at the end. I like that.
Okay, we got to take a quick break right now, and we're going to give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone, and we got a promo for how you can win an all-new leather interior on your car.
You may have seen them at top-notch trade shows around the country or sat on them in a friend's car. Catskin, the premier manufacturer of custom leather interiors, has teamed up with Autoline to give away a free brand new interior for your vehicle. Go to our website, autoline.tv, to enter. Good luck.
Yeah, I really like that. I wish I was eligible to go get an all-new leather interior.
Yeah.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Okay, we're back from the mid-show break, and that's time. Do we have a Dr. Data today?
We do have a Dr. Data.
All right, it's time for Dr. Data.
I had to go check it out. So you may not be familiar with this, but so you are familiar with this?
No.
Okay, so there's a number involved, and you have to sort of figure out what this number might be or what this might be related to. So last week we had a birthday. It was a number. And so
it happened to be the birthday of Enzo Ferrari.
Oh, yeah. Right. I never get that.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, well, Carmen, so this one is different than the last few weeks. We've been mixing it up a little bit. So, Carmen, bring up the first slide, please. Okay. So
it's
a list of cities. And we were talking about Miami. Look at Miami's number 10 on this city.
Los Angeles, number one. Moscow, number second. Number two
in New York City. Sao Paulo, San Francisco, Bogota. You would probably say that.
Bogota.
There you go. I knew you would be able to do that. London, Atlanta. We were talking about Atlanta a little earlier with Trevor on the show, I think before it began. Paris and Miami. So
this is some sort of ranking.
This is some sort of a ranking.
You want me to take a guess?
You take a guess.
Oh, it's clearly congestion.
Oh. Is that right?
Yeah.
Hey, what
Look
do I win?
That. Carmen, bring up the answer. Look at that. The 10 most congested cities in the world, 2017, in that order, and that's from INRIX.
The only one that surprises me is Moscow. I guess I didn't know how congested Moscow was.
I'm surprised Beijing or Shanghai aren't at the top of the list. I've been there, and man.
Well, I mean, cars, though. I mean, there 20 years of really rampant car use. I mean, recently.
I know, but their infrastructure is struggling to catch up with it.
It's true. Yeah, I don't know.
So, but.
Wait, first time on the show? First guest right out of the box?
It took me a second, but I'll take it.
I was very surprised at some of the cities that were on that list. But then you think about it, and it's just like, you hear horror stories about people living in Atlanta.
Detroit could be on there. I mean, I drive 96 every day. It's the only time I missed the Great Recession.
Yeah.
I used to be the only car on the road. It was beautiful. I'd get to work in like 20 minutes.
The only car on the road.
That was my line. During the Great Recession, you could get anywhere.
Yeah, marvelous.
Yeah. So, okay.
So what do you think about that list?
I'd like to know, like I said, it seems to me I've heard more horror stories of places in Asia, like in Thailand and India and the like. So, I don't know. But
I'm a metrics guy. So to me, I'm always wondering what the methodology was. Right. I think that's probably the answer. It's probably was it the methodology of the entire metro region, versus, which may play a role in some of the Asian cities. So I don't know.
Well, you know, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, traffic congestion is bad
everywhere
in
you go.
Every major right. city.
So will autonomous vehicles solve that problem?
Oh, God, no. No, I mean, I think it depends on how long you give me a timeline of, right? I mean, I think it's going to, is it first going to make structural changes within cities, right? You're going to see different use of parking. It will be, I think, the first major change is well, we don't need these parking garages anymore. We don't need them here anymore. We can now move them out into, you know, desolate areas that where these cars can go and park if they need to park and recharge or whatever. It'll eventually, you know, the congestion will get less and less within city centers, the central business districts, and then maybe push out. But we're such a large country. People aren't going to.
I think it's going to help in the sense that, you know, we should see much smoother traffic flow. Once you get the driver out of the equation and let the computers figure out the best traffic flow, things are going to go much smoother. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I also believe that the cost of transportation is going to go down, ergo more people are going to use it. There will actually be more miles driven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly. I think so. Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. It's, you know, people mobility options that don't have them, right? Which is the funny thing is, like, I'm 37. I'm building my future so I can travel when I can't see and drive anymore, right? Like, that's kind of the idea. So I think, you know, that they'll give people options there, certainly. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting to see if, like, how it plays out, how different cities use it. Will autonomous vehicles get to a certain point within a city and then have to park and then some sort of other mass transit option?
People have to ride their bikes to.
We're right. Like, how is that going to play out? Is it going to be? Are people going to still use subway trains and things like that? Is that going to be your last mile option? Is it going to be we all pile into an autonomous bus instead of the car that you know? I mean, there's just so many different variables how this could play out.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting as we get on our way there. I mean, you know, New York was high on that list, and you know, there are reports that because of Lyft and Uber, the congestion in Manhattan has only gotten worse because you're having more and more drivers that are just driving around looking for fares that they can pick up, and
those fares are subsidized, right? Like, everyone knows that Uber and Lyft aren't charging what they need to charge. So it's cheaper to take an Uber in New York than it is to huff it to the subway sometimes. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you? So I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that becomes worse. And then I begin to think about it is that, you know, you're talking about parking. Now, just imagine the situation in a place like New York and in one of the streets that, you know, you already have a lot of double parking. Now, just imagine all the you know, triple and quadruple parking you'll have by automated vehicles. And I mean, how it'll just be like solid.
And the amount of data transferring and energy it takes to even think about the schematics of trying to park those cars. Like, you know, they have to think for themselves. I mean,
right.
The amount of energy that would require is just amazing.
And then when the guy decides to mine Bitcoins on his process.
Right, the whole thing.
Then
right?
The whole thing will just be.
Well, just think about it. One car makes a mistake, you know, because it inevitably will happen. And then all the other cars have to try to figure out why that car made the mistake and how to react to it. And the next thing, all their batteries are dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we just have like 1,000 cars stuck in a road. You know, all these things are going to happen, right?
Uh-huh.
It's going to happen. It's just, you know,
our gridlock future.
Yeah, you never know. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of whether they, you know, how quickly they can solve those tiny problems that become very large ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's also on your list there, Gary, of topics?
Well, I thought it was very interesting. Fred Diaz, who we've had on the show a couple of times, I think when he was with Ram and when he was with Nissan, a guy who was very charismatic and energetic, like a few guys in the industry
like
are.
All the salespeople are.
That's one way of looking at it. You know, he was with Nissan, and then he moved to Mitsubishi, and I mean, I really had to dig to find this because, I mean, all the reporting about his new job, which we'll get to in a second, I mean, none of them mentioned that he had this job at Mitsubishi that he started in October, General Manager for Performance Optimization for Mitsubishi Motors Global Marketing and Sales. And now they've moved Fred.
How big was his card?
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
And now they've moved him and are making him, as of April 1st, the CEO of Mitsubishi Motors North America. Is this something that a job that somebody would want?
I didn't know it was still a car company. Hand of God. No, I'm joking. I mean, like, yeah, I don't know.
You know, anybody in their career in automotive loves to be able to put on their resume CEO and president.
Okay, he was. Got it. Fred was CEO and president of FCA Mexico in 2013.
Oh, okay. I forgot all about that.
And he was head of Ram Truck Brand.
He was kind of.
Well, no, I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, I think that within the Nissan organization, so, you know, it's the Renault Nissan Mitsubishi alliance now. I mean, right. they've added that to the sure. portfolio. So presumably Fred's looking at it from the point of view of, hey, there are bigger jobs to be had within, you know, Nissan itself. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Carlos Ghosn is going to be around forever. And, you know, maybe there's sort of an opportunity. But I mean, to your point. You know, Mitsubishi is like one of those car companies that nobody ever thinks about. Now, maybe it's nobody thinks about here in Michigan, but
No. Look,
sales numbers, how many did they sell last month?
Yeah, about
about
7,000.
Well, I'm going to look at. I don't have this for. Keep talking while
yeah,
I'm looking.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's my point. I think it's a North America, or a U.S. thing. I don't think people are really that familiar with them in the United States.
Right. So
they used to be. Mitsubishi
sure.
used to be bleeding edge technology and sure. design. They were always known for their design, and then the wheels went off the cart, and they fell down to nothing. Mm-hmm. And now I believe the Japanese government went to Nissan and said, hey, look, you got to bail these guys sure. out. Please take them over. And Carlos Ghosn, who saved Nissan, said, hey, I can do it again. And now I can have more scale than anybody. I think they're claiming they did 10.7 million vehicles last year. Mm-hmm. And their plan for 2022 calls for them to hit 14 million vehicles a year. So
they're looking at emerging markets for that makeup. They have to be.
China, yeah. emerging, but also North America, because I want to say Mitsubishi did about 100,000 vehicles in the U.S. last year.
So last year they did 104,000 okay. vehicles, and their big year was in 2002 when they sold 345,000 vehicles.
Wow.
I mean, and that was basically it. And
all,
you know,
that funky Eclipse. It was that Eclipse. Everyone had to have the Eclipse if you were under the age of 22, right? I mean, that was the car.
Pretty much. And, so this is the thing. It's just like, Does that company need to exist in the United States? I mean, yes, they used to make some very interesting cars. I mean, they had the Evo. Everybody had to have an Evo, right? And that's gone out of production.
Does society need more Mitsubishis? No. But, you know, now Renault, Nissan have got Mitsubishi. They're going to make things go. And when you look at Fred Diaz's history, he was pretty good at selling Rams. That's why Nissan got him and said, hey, you got to turn us around here in the United States.
Sell Titans, which
is
they're going to make the badge bigger.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? That's the whole the Mitsubishi badge is going to be the entire front of the car.
Really big.
Yeah.
But, you know, Carlos Ghosn had told all his minions in Nissan, I want 10% market share. And so Nissan last year surpassed Honda for the first time in I don't know how long in sales in the U.S. And Fred was in charge of sales. So they went, hey, Freddie, go over to Mitsubishi and start getting their sales going.
All right. Was he in charge of sales or was he in charge of truck sales at Nissan?
I don't remember off the top of my head. But whatever it was, they liked. He's the guy who introduced, the dealers hate this, by the way, the whole step stair approach mm-hmm. to sales, which Chrysler had been doing, which says, hey, Mr. Dealer, if you sell this many cars a month, good for you. But if you sell this, but more, we're going to give you kickbacks. And if you go above that, you get even more kickbacks. And it's actually generated a lot of bad behavior where you want to buy a Nissan and soon a Mitsubishi at the end of the month when they have to hit their quota to get all the kickbacks from the factory. So I'll put money on the fact that Mitsubishi is probably going to adopt this stair-stepped approach for its dealers.
You know, so basically right now, I mean, pretty much their lineup is based on the Outlander, which is a compact sport utility, which I drove last week, which I was...
It's old, man. It's one of the oldest platforms out there.
So I drive a truck. I have no.
So I began to think about the purpose of Mitsubishi in North America. Okay, and maybe this even would apply to Mitsubishi in other parts of the world. Isn't it possible that Renault Nissan says, okay, the play we need to make is to have a really low-priced vehicle brand.
That's what I was going to agree with. It's a way for Nissan, Renault to basically shovel the lowest common denominator down to a brand without ever having to tarnish their brands.
Right.
In a way to make up X amount of sales.
Because mm-hmm. isn't that what Nissan tried to do with Datsun in some markets in Asia?
Exactly.
You'd have the Datsun brand, and that would be the...
And in Europe, they have another brand called Dacia that actually came out of where?
Romania,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think you're probably right. And if you look at, I want to say the Mitsubishi Mirage is probably one of the cheapest cars you can buy in the American market right now. And the plug-in version of their SUV is the cheapest plug-in that you can buy.
So maybe that is, you know, exactly right. That, you know, mm-hmm. you don't take away from a Sentra. You keep that as being.
Yeah, it's the obvious.
Better.
Me, I'm not inside this guy's head, right? But I mean, to me, that seems like the obvious choice would be to go right after the lowest price vehicle. Give him the cheapest one you can make. Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Hey, we got to take another quick commercial break. I know you've got more topics that you want us to talk about, but first we got to give a shout out to our good friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back talking about all kinds of things automotive. Actually, I got a question for you, Dustin, that comes from one of our viewers here. He's asking about tariffs on steel and aluminum. He says, as of this afternoon, GM's down 4.5%, Ford down 3.5%, FCA down 3.6%. He says, with a huge chunk of profit now going to be spent on tariffs, where are these companies going to take money to cover the cost? What do you think about this whole move to impose tariffs on, what is it, Chinese steel?
I know
it's all across the board, every foreign.
It's going to impact probably Canada as far as I can tell more than it would China. Steel's heavy. We're not moving a lot of it from China. What do I think overall of it? I think it's an absolute terrible idea. It is going to make your car more expensive in the long run. I mean, we're already dumping in a ton of technology into your car. Your car is eventually going to... I mean, if this sticks for a long period of time, right, it'll eventually cause cars to be more expensive, absolutely. GM's not going to pay for it. We are.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost jobs, too. I mean, that's what protectionist trade policies do. And that's what this is likely going to do. We did the same thing in 2002. We slapped... anti-dumping rules out there. It cost a lot of jobs and cost a lot of money. U.S. steel prices went up, and, you know, AK Steel, U.S. Steel, they were all very happy about it. But we actually lost more jobs in 2002 because of higher steel prices than were employed in the steel industry. I mean, I think that's all you need to know, you know, about how this is going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was surprised. Actually, China is directly... maybe in the top 10 in terms of companies that are sent, because I got a release from steel industry this week, and before I knew all this other stuff was happening, I wish I kept it. But what's interesting is apparently they sell steel to countries like Korea that then sell it to us. So it's not direct. So not only do we have a problem with you know, things coming from China, mm-hmm. but also from Korea and Turkey and other countries, which... Could be a big mess,
and it's a commodity. So I mean, that you have to work in future markets, you have to work in premiums that they deal in based on geography. I mean, it's a very complicated market, mm-hmm. And it does not take a lot of fear for prices to go up.
Right. So one of the things I thought was interesting was the report that FCA is going to stop its diesels. Which are primarily, I mean, they're going to keep them in their light trucks and SUVs, but in terms of the passenger cars, now this is FCA, so we also have to think about Europe in this context.
Well, we have to, because there's no diesels in pass cars
here
with FCA in the U.S. market.
Right. And then the Federal Administrative Court in Leipzig said the cities of Stuttgart and Dusseldorf could legally ban older, more polluting diesel cars from zones most affected by diesels. Okay, so Stuttgart. Who's in Stuttgart? Right? I mean, is this the end of pass car diesels? I mean, is this the beginning of the end? I mean, is the...
I have a feeling we'll have different answers.
I believe it is for passenger cars.
Okay, never mind. We have the same answer.
And especially in Europe because, you know, look, now even Mercedes is getting accused of having cheated with software on its emission standards. FCA probably any day now is going to get nailed by the Justice Department and pay some sort of huge fines. Volkswagen already caught it. And so in Germany especially, but throughout Europe, diesel all of a sudden has become a really bad word, really bad. And the automakers are trying to do everything they can to really talk about their investments in electrification and what they're doing with electric cars, even getting into Formula E, which is all electric race cars and the like. So I would say, yeah, Europe has been the market for diesels. It's dying fast. This latest rule is going to scare the hell out of everybody thinking, I better sell my car now because it's going to lose resale value. So there's going to be a collapse in the market there. But going back to your original point, light-duty trucks, full-size pickups in the American market, I think diesels are doing fantastic, aren't going to do even better, only because Ford's going to put a new V6 diesel in the F-150, and GM's coming out with an inline six for the Silverado and Sierra. They're going to sell those things.
What do you think, Dustin?
Oh, I agree totally. I mean, I don't see it going away in the U.S. market anytime soon. I mean, it could. It depends. Listen, who knows what the next round of legislators we have that decide they want to regulate emissions like they do in Europe. I mean, all that is going to impact the market. Mm-hmm. It just depends on whether we make a long-term commitment to that in the United States. And then I think you'll see that slowly erode. But yeah, we've never been a big market for diesel passenger cars anyway. So so it's certainly nothing here. But yeah, it's. They're going away fast, I think so. Yeah.
Doesn't it seem odd that you know, Rudolf Diesel, who came from Germany, I mean, so it's basically a German invention, and now these, you know, as you say, all of these companies are pointing out that they're electrifying their vehicles in a big way. They're not saying we're dieselifying our vehicles in a big way. It's just purely electric.
Well, you know, Europe's gone crazy about diesels for a number of years now, and I never understood that because in the U.S., by our fuel economy and emissions regulations now, diesels have to meet the exact same standards as gasoline engines. Mm-hmm. Whether it's NOx, whether it's particulate matter, it doesn't matter. They got to meet the same standard. Why the Germans years ago didn't try to protect their investment in it and adopt that, and instead they went into all this software cheating to try to not make that investment now they're paying the price for it. They're burning all kinds of investment money that they put into diesels, and they're burning up brand image at the same time for having cheated on it. You know, last year was elections for the chancellor in Germany, and it became an election issue. You had Angela Merkel lecturing the car companies, and so diesel is a dirty word as far as they're concerned. They don't want to even talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of German companies, another interesting thing that happened this week was Geely investing $9 billion in Daimler, which is certainly not making the Germans all that happy. That gives them about 10% thereabouts.
Right. And so this is an intriguing story. I'm blown away by the guy who started Geely,
Li Shufu.
You know, he was born in rural China, born dirt poor. I've heard the guy talk, and I was in China, and the whole audience was laughing. And I was saying, what are you guys laughing about? What's he saying? And they said, no, it's not what he's saying. It's how he's saying it. You know, to them, he talks like the Beverly Hillbillies sound to us. I mean, he's that rural. Mm-hmm. But the guy is amazing in this empire that he's putting together. And in Germany, if you buy 3% of a company's stock, you have to publicly declare, hey, I bought 3% of your stock. And there had been rumors out there. Bloomberg had reported several weeks ago that Geely was acquiring Daimler shares, but all the story said was, well, it can't be more than 3% or they would have had to declare. Mm-hmm. Well, he comes out and declares, I got 9% of the company, 9.7%. And this has sent shockwaves through the auto industry, but especially in Germany. And they're not comfortable with this at all. They're trying to say, well, he can't possibly have a board seat because he owns Volvo and that competes with Mercedes. And he owns Volvo truck and that competes with Daimler truck. And they're all nervous about it. But if the guy's got 10% of the company, I think he can demand a board seat.
Welcome to the board, sir. Right. Yeah, I think, and I don't think it's a shock that they're also looking at U.S. car companies. I mean, there's parts of FCA that he wants. I don't know that, but I'm pretty confident that he's probably looking that way, right? Marchione can't just float things out there and not have
people. Sergio saying, dang it, why didn't he just come by us?
Right, and I wouldn't say that's off the table. I mean, they have a lot of, the Chinese are not afraid to spend money, and they're looking to grow that empire, and you get that North American market too.
So John, what is behind all of this? Okay, so he has Geely, which is an auto manufacturer in China of its own accord. He owns Volvo Car. He owns Lotus, Proton, the London Electric Taxi Vehicle Corporation. It's making the black cabs. And he owns the flying car company, Terrafugia. I mean, what's going on here? I mean, why is this guy suddenly...
World domination.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, I totally agree, Dustin. I mean, this guy's putting together an empire, and he's putting it together really fast right now. And, he's got to make a play in North America, right? He's got to make a play here.
Beyond Volvo, sure. Absolutely.
What I'd like to know is, where's all the money coming from? I mean, 9 billion euros for Daimler, some of the other stuff he probably picked up for chump change and the like. Mm-hmm. But I'd love to know who his backers are. And what makes it all the more intriguing is this guy's truly an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Geely is not a government-owned company. It's not owned by one of the cities like Beijing Automotive or mm-hmm. Shanghai Automotive or Guangzhou Automotive or any of those others. And that's what I think is fascinating about this. He's able to move far faster than any of those state-owned Chinese companies would be able to go. And who knows what his end game is. But I think the guy wants to be, probably in his mind, the biggest automotive player in the world.
Mm-hmm. Isn't he arguably the biggest automotive player in the world right now?
Mr. Goen, I think, would argue he is.
Biggest one no one's ever heard of, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, at least on this, in the Western Hemisphere.
I think we're going to hear a lot more about this guy. Li Shufu, you got to remember that name. This guy's a player.
All right. So final thing. Okay. So I saw this, and you may know something about this more than I do. You guess the number really quickly.
Okay. Luck.
So Jeep has been recognized as a 2018 cult brand honoree at the annual gathering which is held by the Society of Cult Brands.
That's a thing.
It's a thing.
Sounds fascinating.
It's a big thing, apparently. And So Mike Manley, who is the head of Jeep brand, said having the Jeep brand acknowledged as a cult brand honoree, just as the all-new Jeep Wrangler and the 2019 Jeep Cherokee and blah, 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 is a testament to the people who, since 1941, have dedicated themselves to building the world's most capable SUVs with all road capability second to none. So I look back to see the other cult brands that have been so acknowledged. In 2014, Red Bull, GoPro, Harley.
Harley, sure.
NHL, Las Vegas, Urban Outfitters, Madden, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, 2015, Cirque du Soleil, UFC, the Fighting Championship.
Did you say Saskatchewan Rough Riders?
Yes, I did.
What?
There's got to be a Canadian connection.
All right.
There's got to be, right?
I don't completely understand this. But it goes 2018. So the other ones in 2018, okay, the other ones that are being acknowledged along with Jeep, Snickers, Gatorade, Vans, the shoe manufacturer or maker.
Oh, clearly they have very
Jack Daniels,
standards.
Beats by Dr. Dre, PlayStation, and Charity Water.
How are most of those not like super ubiquitous? Like how is it a cult for Gatorade?
How is it a cult for Jeep?
Jeep, I understand.
They sell more Gatorades than Jeeps. It's
cheaper.
Yeah, but, people go to Jeep Jamborees. And
oh, yeah, they all wave hi to each other.
And blah, 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 blah.
Some sort of, weird, hand gesture they do. I don't know if it's hi or thumbs up or whatever. They do something when they see each other, right?
According to the guy who's a co-founder and chair of the brand selection committee, other automotive brands have been nominated over the years, but it's so fitting that Jeep is the first cult brand honoree. It is an iconic brand with vehicles that stand apart from any other in the automotive category.
Jeez, I would have put Tesla ahead of Jeep from a cult standpoint.
Yeah, but the people at Jeep aren't going to, drink the Kool-Aid and, take the cyanide pills like Tesla people will.
Gatorade.
Wait for the comet.
Isn't it bizarre? I mean, so Jeep is happy about this. I mean, they're geeked about this.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the whole selling point of Jeep, right, is that it's this rugged off-road
cult brand.
You got to be like a outdoorsy kind of person to want one.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have something wrong with you to hear the wind noise and the, yeah. Sorry, Jeep. But yeah, no, I it makes sense to me. I mean, yeah. I'd tout it too. I think if it was my company,
the first automotive brand to become a cult brand.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with it. Like I said, I think they do some sort of wave or thumbs up and
the Jeep drivers.
Yeah. They seem to acknowledge each other on the road, just like Harley people do, right?
It's a band of brothers and sisters.
Right. Right. You're more likely to pull over and help someone in a Jeep than you would be in a truck, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame them.
Okay, before we wrap it up, we got a phone call that came in here, and somebody took the time to call. Carmen, let's bring that in.
Hi, John, Gary, and guests. John, this is Dale Leonard out of Cleveland, Ohio, and I have a comment regarding to your last week's show regarding, the future of auto shows. I went to the Cleveland Auto Show yesterday, and I've been going for 48 years straight now, and I'll tell you what, I was never more disappointed. No concept vehicles. Last year we had 1,200 cars. This year we were down to 850, and it was nothing more than a huge auto mall. And I can see auto shows are going to disappear at this rate, and it's really sad. Especially like with me, I look forward to concept vehicles, not one, but that's the way things are going. Hey, great show as always. Thanks for letting me make a comment, and take care. Have a wonderful day.
Well, thanks for that call, Dale. And, I think in the U.S., if you want to go see, I'll say, a quote-unquote real auto show, there's really Detroit, L.A., New York, maybe New York, maybe Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into the others, like Cleveland, Philadelphia and the like, they're just not supported really by the manufacturers. It's really just the dealers who put the cars out on display. So sorry about that.
Yeah, well, there's so many ways to get at the same numbers they used to get at auto shows, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they're just trying to sell you a car, and they have all kinds of metrics they can get you online with. And I think it's a generational thing too. Like I don't particularly, I'm an old millennial, right? Like I'm just barely a millennial. But I don't think they want to go to dealerships either. I don't.
Correct.
So what's a car show? But
you want to go to a car show?
No, God, no. And I cover them. And no, I have no interest. No, it does. There's nothing there that is interesting to me because I get all of my interest before I would ever go. There's no unveiling of a curtain. I've seen it all. Right. It's online.
What about some of your friends who don't have access to the information that you have access to?
No. Speaking from that, from them, too, I think. Yeah, I don't think people. I think there's still a little bit of interest from it being an event. People like to go to events. The fact that it's a car show is less important, I think, than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
People want to go because it's a big event with a lot of people and they can see relatively cool things. So you get people that aren't ingrained in the industry or from Detroit or wherever. Yes, I think there's a little bit of interest, but I certainly think it's waning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Could not agree more. And with that,
good luck to Trevor.
Yeah. Well, that's for the show at least. But let's wrap this up. Dustin Walsh, thanks so much for coming on,
man.
Great to have you on the show here.
Thank you.
And Gary?
Fantastic job.
No, thanks.
Yeah. Let's do it again next week.
Okay.
And of course, have to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear. a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.